Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, hit us up there. Joining us now on the line, he is our Attorney General, also candidate for United States Senate. Steve Marshall joins us on the line. General, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jeff. Thank you.
Sorry, we've been talking a lot about Steve Flowers this morning. Hey, how's the campaign going?
It's good. You know, we were, I got 5 cities in 3 days last week, all over the state. Still been exciting to be able to meet with folks that want to share not only their support, but also issues that matter to them and what they expect from their United States Senator. And the good thing is, as AG, we've been able to deliver results for people across a variety of issues, and excited to do the same thing in the United States Senate.
Well, you know, someday we need to talk just sports on this show when things slow down. But you've been making your way to a lot of sporting events. You got to, I did see it, the Auburn Alabama game, but you've been campaigning there. Now we get through the holidays, and then it really is going to, I think, ratchet up some.
Yeah, I think we've been on. I think I spent 2 nights at home last week in my own bed, just traveling around the state. But it's, and the thing I think that's most exciting as a candidate is just those 2 or 3 people that you have a chance to meet with around a table and just talk about what they're facing, or to be like I was last week at a cotton gin over in Macon County and just sort of sharing with the farmers there the things that are impacting them adversely and what they're trying to be able to do to support the state. It's those conversations, I think, that really train a candidate on the issues that matter to the people that we represent. And it's exciting to be, everywhere from Huntsville to Mobile and all parts in between, and excited to be able to do that for the next now almost 6 months.
Well, a few things going on in the news I think we need to hit on. First off, I talked to the chairman all about this earlier in the program, and watching this, the redistricting trend, you had a Texas decision that went, I think, favorably. Indiana seems to be moving, and, there's a lot of momentum here that this redistricting sort of net national battle here, it's going the way for Republicans. What does the legal landscape look like? How are you feeling about it right now?
Yeah, definitely encouraged. The Texas case was not one that included, a Section 2 claim. Alabama's one that's been subject to that. And so a little bit different legal nuance, but yet in a 6-3 decision, the court recognized the authority of the legislature to be able to draw lines consistent with traditional redistricting principles. I think it was good to see that it was a 6-3 decision so that there was no conservative on the court that abandoned the majority opinion in that case. But the linchpin for us right now is, what does the court do with Louisiana's case that's pending? It's been argued, we led the brief to be able to support and argue that what Louisiana did by allowing race to predominate in the drawing of the district was inconsistent with both what the Constitution and the law requires. And so I think that case will go a long way in deciding what happens with the case that we now have pending in the court. But I think not only was Louisiana argument encouraging, but the results in Texas kind of affirm that. And so we're hopeful for what's next.
Speaking of the Supreme Court, you're making an appearance for the court about in this Ham versus Smith case, and essentially it has to do with capital sentences and the, I guess, mentally disabled. And you and I were talking off air about the way AL.com sort of branded it, being this mildly disabled man convicted of murder. But that's not the case. But the states want the right to, or the ability, I should say, to exercise punishment as they see fit. And this case has a lot to do with it. Walk us through a little bit of it and what we need to know.
Yeah, first of all, we need to remember what the defendant did, and that was 2 days out of prison for burglary charges. He ends up finding the victim, driving them to a remote location, and kills the victim with a hammer and a saw all over $144, his boots, and he ends up pawning his tools. I mean, a horrific crime for which both the judge and the jury believe that capital punishment was appropriate. And the argument here of his lawyers has to do with a decision from the Supreme Court roughly 15, 20 years ago that said that states cannot execute those that are significantly intellectually disabled. And there's a test to be able to determine what that means, one of which is an IQ test that is in that field very reliable. And in this case, the defendant had multiple IQ tests, all of which were in a range that would not allow him to qualify for that exception to the state being able to execute him. And the question before the court is really pretty straightforward, is how should trial courts deal with multiple IQ scores and evaluating the analysis of whether execution can go forward? And so, you know, we're excited to be able to offer what we think is an appropriate way for trial courts to consider it, to allow the trial courts to gain greater clarity in how they address what we call an Atkins claim moving forward. But most importantly, for the victims of, or the family members of the victims in this case, to be able to get the authority to move forward with the execution of the defendant.
And I, you know, kind of walk us through the timeline here, where we are, and what would be a preferable outcome?
Yeah, I think the preferable outcome, and it's really pretty specific, Jeff, has to do with the statistical analysis that the court will use to aggregate scores and how they evaluate it based on what those tests would provide as their standard error measurement. I know that gets a little bit complicated, but yet I think that the question for the court is give some guidance for the trial courts, which they will do as a result of what takes place from the argument tomorrow. And then for us to have that case sent back down to the trial court to evaluate it under that analysis. And any statistical measure that the court would come forward with, we believe that we'll prevail. And so we think the state will be the ultimate winner, and we'll have the opportunity to do what justice requires here.
This seems to be dominating the news, and I think it's maybe a more of a manufactured news cycle from Democrats, but it is what it is. What's going on in the Caribbean, the action from the Trump DOD and striking these drug boats, and there's a lot of discussion about the legality of it, which I think it's a dubious claim to suggest there's any kind of entitlement to due process here. But it's getting a lot of attention on Capitol Hill. You look at this from a legal standpoint and from a policy standpoint, but what do you think of what the president's doing here?
Yeah, we support the president. I mean, look, if you look at, you know, the loss of life that's occurring as a result of the poison the cartels bringing over the borders, it is a significant issue that we're facing in our country, significant terrorist threat to our country. And the fact that the cartel has been designated as a terrorist organization by this administration gives the president certain authority to be able to act. You heard from Admiral Bradley this week that there's actionable intelligence that the military has. They understand not only what's in those boats, but also those individuals that are in the process of bringing fentanyl to be distributed eventually into the United States. And the fact that we're taking aggressive action isn't at all inconsistent with what the Obama administration did, right? I mean, they took actions with drones. We're simply using our military intelligence and assets to take care of an issue that has a significant adverse impact on our country. And so we've been a vocal supporter of what the president's done. I think he has the lawful authority to be able to do it. And what we're hearing mostly from the left is really an effort to discredit Secretary of the Department of War that they don't like, as opposed to taking a full-scale review of the benefits that this is having on the streets of our country.
We'll talk about this, and you spent time at the border, and that, you know, during the Biden administration, it wasn't just the human trafficking and you know, the unfettered migration into the country and what to do there, but it was also drug trafficking and fentanyl and getting the Trump administration seems to have shut down a lot of that. And like, it looks to me like from a policy standpoint, They're trying to close another doorway into the country. But do we see it on the streets? Are you seeing like a are you hearing about a tangible impact from some of these policies from this administration?
We are. You know, number one, we're seeing a reduction in the number of people that are dying from overdose deaths. That's a very tangible way that we can show it. But more importantly, it's just basic economics is that, you know, we hear about the increased cost of fentanyl on the streets, and that has to do with simply the supply and demand. And, you know, Jeff, the cartel is trying to rectify their logistical problem, which is we've seen a significant reduction in fentanyl coming across the border. They've not been effective in using that land base for bringing into the country. And so now they're going to the waters to try to bring the drugs in that way. And we're now aggressively trying to stop that becoming a vehicle for increased opportunities for the cartel to put those drugs on the streets. And so, again, really good policy has been able to allow for the border to become much more secure. Not only has it stopped the human flow, but it stopped the drug flow in significant amounts. This is the cartel's additional effort to do the thing they were able to do so easily during the Biden administration, and now the Trump administration is making that hard.
Joined by Steve Marshall here on the program. He is our Attorney General, also a candidate for the United States Senate to fill the seat that will be vacated by Tommy Tuberville at the end of his term. General, the other, there's a lot of Democrat narratives, but I'll get you to respond. Obamacare and renewing subsidies, and it looks like they're trying to broker some kind of deal, but along the way just kind of looks kind of patchworky to me, and to get through the election perhaps. But if you're elected to the U.S. Senate, I mean, how much are you watching this? What do you make of it? What do you think? Will we ever have a good, viable Republican alternative to what's been kind of plaguing us since 2010?
Yeah, we don't have any choice, Jeff. I mean, we have to have a Republican common sense approach to deal with the question that Obamacare supposedly was designed to deal with. And let's remember, Obamacare passed without Republican votes. And so this is a Democratic plan that ultimately has failed. You know, uniquely as Attorney General, we fought through two types of litigation to try to remove Obamacare from the books. And but for one vote from John Roberts, we'd have been successful. And we are where we are. I do think you're seeing alternatives that are coming forward. The worst thing that I think we can do is to be able to kick the can down the road and not address what are the fundamental problems with what's going on with Obamacare. I'm very interested in what Senator Cassidy is doing. I've seen Senator Scott likewise have proposals. But if we don't deal with individuals who should never be eligible for the program, if we don't deal with the fraud and the abuse that's going on, if we're not giving individuals greater autonomy on how it is that they're spending these dollars, then we're never going to be successful in trying to help those that are in need of healthcare coverage. And so definitely we'll be looking at what's coming forward and hoping that we see strong Republican leadership providing a solution.
Also, and this is probably more going on, and we'll see how it plays out. And we found out that the Biden DOJ played a little fast and loose with the rules, spying on U.S. senators, at least trying to harvest their data from their cell phones or whatever. And when they do that, and I guess you're on both sides of this, on the prosecutor side, you know how this works. And then, obviously, I think for a lot of voters, I mean, will we ever get a handle on the deep state and this sort of permanent bureaucracy that seems to, like, you know, they look at the big picture, they look at the long term, and they will tell you straight up that politicians, presidents, members of Congress come and go. But, like, we've been struggling with this, I would argue, since the first Trump term. What do you see there that does impact Capitol Hill? But it seems like if we're ever going to really change the trend there, it's got to happen on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and they've got to exercise aggressively their oversight responsibility. It's one of the reasons why, you know, part of my message to voters on the campaign trail is send a prosecutor to Washington. I understand what it's like to issue subpoenas. I understand what it's like to put somebody under oath. I know what it's like to question individuals to uncover the truth. And I think there's a variety of areas in which that opportunity is ripe. I mean, Arctic Frost has now been exposed as a result of what Senator Grassley and the Judiciary Committee has done to figure out that, in fact, we saw senators' phone records be subpoenaed. But, Jeff, I'm in that boat, too, because I led the Republican Attorney General Association at that time. They investigated our association and what we were doing from a leadership side there. And clearly wrong, no nexus to a crime that otherwise could be connected. And what we saw is an abuse of the process by a federal prosecutor who had no oversight. So I'm looking forward to being able to go to D.C. and provide some oversight of the deep state that's desperately needed.
Yeah, and I guess we'll just figure out how to go from there. Hey, before we let you go, folks want to find out more about your campaign or follow you on social media or whatever it may be. How can they do so?
Yeah, stevemarshforsenate.com. We're also out on, on X and on Facebook, and follow where we're all around the state.
All right. Steve Marshall, ladies and gentlemen. General, thanks again.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, we'll be right back. This is FN Talk 106.5. And I'm wondering how I